Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:53 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is December 15th. So the ECB had their rate decision today. They rose rates by 50 basis points, and the press conference afterwards, basically, what Christine Lagarde had to say was that she's not returning, and that no one, and she literally said no one should take what they've done as pointing towards a pivot, that they anticipate raising rates further, that they anticipate leaving interest rates higher for longer, and that's very much in tune with what the Federal Reserve had to say, and they are intent on getting the inflation rate back down towards their target. But of course, and then they're also talking about quantitative tightening. What I find interesting right now is that the euro was in negative territory today, despite that fiery rhetoric, and the price is right in the region of the lows from back in 2020, and also in the region at least of the lows from 2015 through 17. And we have a short-term overbought condition. So I think there's certainly scope for some pause and consolidation here at the very minimum, and potentially more than that. What's also, I think, especially interesting right now is the large number of downside weekly key reversals that we are seeing. So the Euro Stoxx index had been really quite steady until 2 days ago. Then consecutive days on the downside, and we're looking at a downside weekly key. If it finishes anywhere close to today's closing value tomorrow, well, then that's going to be a significant sign of short-term resistance, potentially medium-term resistance. And of course, if we see downside follow through next week, and of course, it's a low liquidity week heading into Christmas, then anyone who wants to have an undue effect on the market has greater opportunity to do so in the week before and immediately after Christmas. So we could definitely see an uptick in volatility. Then let's just think about what's happening with the UK. So the Bank of England, they also rose rates in here today. There were two people on the Bank of England's committee who didn't want to raise rates at all. Now, the UK has got some idiosyncrasies which are unique to it, in that there is a large number of mortgage fixes are going to roll off next year. Now, the FTSE 250 is encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and there is a very consistent sequence of lower rally highs, and it's now pulling back once more. So this is still a consistent downtrend, and until that sequence of lower rally highs is broken, then we can't give the benefit of the doubt to the upside just yet. Now, the Euro Stoxx had broken that sequence, but this is a big downside weekly key reversal this week, so we're going to give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic. Now let's just think about the pound. So the pound has been resurgent, but the Bank of England is talking about the possibility that inflation has in fact peaked. Well, one thing at least is that the bond market agrees, but the pound doesn't like to hear that. Our currency investors don't like to think that the Bank of England isn't going to continue to follow through on attempting to kill inflation. So the pound is pulling back here from both the region of the 200 and 1,000 day moving averages, and there's certainly been a loss of momentum in this area for most of the last few months. So we would, I think, have to give at least some consideration to the potential that we're going to see lower levels overall. Now let's, if we just stick with the European markets, what I find especially interesting right now is this divergence that we're seeing between bond market investors and what central banks are saying. The only place where they seem to be in sync is in the UK. So The 2-year yield is at about 3.4% and was down slightly in here today. And the base rate is at 3.5%. So the Bank of England is talking about the peak in inflation, and the bond market is pricing that in and pricing in the potential that interest rates are going to be lower by this time next year. The Federal Reserve is certainly not giving any indication that they believe that that's going to be the case, and neither is the ECB. What the Europeans are talking about is quantitative tightening, and that resulted in a leg higher for Italian spreads in here today. Now, bond yields across Europe rose, but Italian yields are rising faster. So we're up to about 210 basis points and bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And there are a couple of things to consider. The first is that investors are obviously worried that the ECB will be selling Italian bonds more than others, and they've certainly bought a lot of them. They're not going to engage in that quantitative tightening, though, until March, but we can see clearly from the size of the balance sheet that it has taken quite a significant leg lower over the last 6 or 7 weeks, and it is back below the 200-day moving average. Now, we haven't had too many examples of quantitative tightening around the world, but one of the first was from the ECB, and they put in a trillion, they took out a trillion between 2012 and 2014. And by the time we got to 2014, there was a lot of concern about the potential for deflation. And that's basically what the bond markets are pricing in, that bond market investors are not willing to continue to sell bonds at these levels because inflation is moderating and they don't want to miss the lows. So bond investors are increasing their positions, at least in sovereigns. And then, of course, there is the real threat of a recession looming, and that will help to bring down inflationary pressures. And there's the real potential that we'll have a deflationary shock as a result of that. So bond investors continue to push yields lower. And the 10-year in the USA is at about 3.45%. There is also this belief in the bond markets that the 2-year is the best indicator of where rates are likely to go. And right now, the 2-year is at about 4.25, and the Fed funds rate is 4.5. So it's already pricing in that there's going to be a peak in the not so distant future. So that's certainly the view of the bond market. Central banks are still wedded to this perspective that they need to get back to their target rates. And they still think that there's going to be a soft landing, and that there's going to be a soft landing because there's a dearth of labor. And then there also, I think there is the one of the points that Howard Marks was making in his memo is one of the big reasons for the wage price spiral in the 1970s was that inflation went up, and then there was a lot of union workers, and that union workers were a much greater percentage of the overall workforce back then than they are now, and that there were lockstep moves in terms of pay and inflation. So it was the pay agreements contributed to the wage price spiral, and we don't have quite the same phenomenon now, although certainly there is a growing labor movement, and there have been a lot of demands for more wages from individuals. So as we look then at Wall Street, the Nasdaq is also working on a downside weekly key reversal and pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. And the Fangman plus Tesla shares are those eight big companies are breaking down again relative to the total market. So this long period of outperformance by the large cap companies and mega cap companies is quickly coming to an end. And of course, then we have what's going on in China. And that's likely, I think, to weigh on companies that rely on China for a lot of their sales, and Apple's a big one of those. And this is an evolving top formation, and it is coming back down into the region of the lows, and I suspect that we have further to go on the downside. Microsoft has been really quite resilient, but it is now also encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. And this brewing question about their use of AI in propagating conspiracy theories on MSN, I think that's something that is likely to be priced in. And central banks really do want to get inflation down, and they're doing what they can to try and make that happen. So we're likely to see deflationary issues, and we're likely to see unemployment eventually begin to rise. And there's going to still be this mismatch between available labor, available jobs, and I don't think that that's something that's going to be, or that can easily be remedied by monetary policy. And then, of course, there's what's happening in China. And I remain of the view that the best way to monitor that is with copper, because China is such a massive consumer and processor and importer of the metal. And copper prices were down 10 cents in here today, pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. And we've had a good size rally over the last 6 or 7 weeks, and now it does look like it's beginning to run out of steam. China was able to forestall the worst effects of the pandemic for about 2 years, maybe a bit more than that. But now they've decided that they're going to let it rip. And there will be at least 1 million, perhaps 2 million deaths as a result of that. And but it's likely to be front-loaded. And that when we think about Omicron being more infectious than both the original COVID virus and the Delta variant, then the rate of infectivity means that the spread is going to be exceptionally quick. And there's a strong likelihood then that as more people become ill, then less people will move around. And the peak infectivity rate will probably be at some point in the next 10 weeks. I'm probably further towards the end of that 10-week horizon. It's also going to take us up into the New Year holiday, and I think one of the big questions around the how well that quarantine and movement prohibition is being enforced will be whether people are allowed to move around in advance of the New Year holiday. But copper prices pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average, well, then that's an indication that demand within China is slowing down. And one of the reasons I think that the dollar was firmer in here today was also because the renminbi was a little weaker. Now, China has announced massive fiscal stimulus for the property sector. So I think the worst effects of the rising number of COVID cases are going to peak in the first quarter. Then subsequently, we'll see that the fiscal supports that have been put in place over the last 6 weeks or so will start to be felt. And the Shanghai Property Index has rebounded and is now pausing in the region of the upper side of that range that's been forming for nearly 4 years. So I suspect that 2023 is going to be a very volatile year, that we're going to have a lot of up and down action, but perhaps more accurately, down and up. And the VIX index, having pulled back really violently for 2 days, popped on the upside in here today. So it's continuing to hold the 20 area. The sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact. And it is worth reminding ourselves that major peaks in the VIX coincide with market lows, and that troughs do not coincide with market lows. So that would suggest that we're nowhere near a serious market low right now, and that there is significant potential for additional downside. So obviously then there will be a certain amount of a flight to quality, and that's also one of the reasons why bonds and the dollar are a bit steadier. And gold was down 30 in here today, so pulling back from the region of $1,800, and does look now likely to further unwind the short-term overbought condition. This, of course, brings us to the central question, and it is not so much about whether growth is going to slow, unemployment is going to rise, or there's going to be a recession. I think that's already baked in the cake. The big question, and the only real question, is what will the response of central banks be to that recession? Will they go straight back to the pandemic and global financial crisis playbook? Will they massively increase money supply, greatly increase their bond buying programs so that the size of balance sheets, central bank balance sheets, ramp higher? And will they do whatever is necessary to inflate asset prices again, which is exactly what they have been doing for the last 14 years? Or will they display a more chastened attitude because of this inflation problem? Will they be reluctant to cut interest rates to the bone? Instead, will they hold off and hold rates somewhat higher than they have been for most of the last 14 years? And will they then begin to raise rates faster? Will they withdraw the liquidity introduced in response to the economic contraction quicker? And historically, at least for the last 14 years, they've been worried about doing that because they were so worried about the sustainability of growth. Whereas now it seems that their focus has changed to be more aggressive in trying to combat inflation. So this is going to be a very central argument. And how the central banks of the world meet this challenge is going to have a huge bearing on risk assets overall, and then the sustainability of the dollar as the global reserve currency is also going to hinge on this question. My feeling is that it's more likely than not that we will see interest rates cut in response to a looming recession, and then central banks will be more reticent to leave liquidity in the market. However much liquidity they put in, they'll start to take out faster. So we're likely to be in a more volatile environment with shorter cycles, because we now have a discount rate. And every risk asset has to be compared against it. And as long as interest rates are holding above zero, there is clear potential that all assets, but particularly private assets, are going to come under pressure. And Brookfield Asset Management continues to trend downwards. And this is a really quite dynamic move we're seeing in here this week. I've also been highlighting the fact that Goldman Asset Management is a major source of revenue for the group, and a large number of hedge funds that are better at raising cash than managing hedges have basically outsourced their hedge books to Goldman Asset Management, and they've been put into lots of private structures. And with higher interest rates and high asset prices, then it's likely that a lot of those private assets are going to get marked down in a really significant fashion. And at the hedges that have helped to sustain the business model at Goldman Asset Management, well, they do look like they're going to come under pressure. And we're certainly seeing the unwinding of the short-term overbought condition in real time. And JP Morgan was able to sidestep most of the problems from the global financial crisis, and it was one of the first to break out to new all-time highs, and it rallied impressively over the last 7 or 8 weeks to break the sequence of lower rally highs, but now it's rolling over as well. So we're certainly seeing more downside pressure, even in the financial sector, which isn't really the epicenter of risk on this occasion. It's the shadow banks are where the epicenter of risk is, and particularly in those private assets. Now, oil prices, having rallied for 3 consecutive days, were in negative territory in here today and pausing in the region of the lows put in from September and also in November. So this is the first very minor area of resistance, and it is pausing. I think this is a lot more to do with what's happening in China than anything else. Now, natural gas prices were in positive territory today, and the prices on the west coast of the US were at $50 per MMBTU in here today, which is rather extraordinary. And then they pulled back by nearly half. But still, that's nearly 4 times higher than what prices are in much of the rest of the country. And it really does speak to the lack of infrastructure development and the control over planning for energy assets that the green lobby has. But then I don't think that's going to change anytime soon either. So carbon credits were also in negative territory, and that's also pricing in the potential for lower economic growth overall, because lower growth means fewer emissions. Fewer emissions means there's less demand. I do kind of think that carbon credits have got bond-like characteristics, because what happens when prices go down is governments issue fewer of them and help to support the price. Then they bid them up so that the price remains at a level which is going to curtail pollution. So they are going to be a kind of buy the dip type of asset for the foreseeable future. And the European Union wants the price at 135, so they will get it. And then we'll see what if that's high enough to encourage additional new investments in non-polluting types of energy production. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.